Chapter 15. The alarm chirped, disturbing his sleep gradually. It whispered to him through the fog, prodding gently like a cautious lover. When he didn't move, the alarm tried again, then insisted, and when that did not work, shouted as much as its little web of circuits would allow. Giles inhaled slowly, rolling over onto his back as he rubbed his face in a deep, aching exhaustion. He stared a moment at the bedroom ceiling as the alarm insisted. Eventually, he tired of the noise and rolled over to slap it back to silence. He yawned and rose from bed. The light was low and gray. He shuffled along the floor on bare feet to the water closet, shut the door, and turned on the light, a bright and hateful thing that reduced the features of the little room to flat white noise. He found the toilet through squinted eyes, performed the task his body demanded, flushed, and exited. He turned on the shower and turned the dial over to its hottest setting, and then drifted over to the sink like an apparition while he waited for the water to warm. He squeezed a wad of toothpaste onto his brush, reduced the temperature of the shower with a word uttered to no one, stepped into the stall, and began to brush his teeth robotically. He finished with the shower, dressed and combed his hair, and went downstairs. The house was as empty as his heart. He skipped breakfast as always, collected his bag, went out to the garage, and unplugged the car. He stood for a moment in silence, wondering what would happen if he just turned around and went back in, went back upstairs, climbed behind a few walls, and hid. He got in the car. The dash screen came on as soon as he lowered into the seat, lighting up in inoffensive hues ranging from blue to orange to green, and he waited a moment for any necessary system updates to complete. A few seconds after that, the screen chimed and prompted for his vid. He swiped a card by the reader, and various disabled portions of the screen enabled for his use. From the left menu, he scrolled through a list of pre-programmed destinations until he found his office. He tapped it, and the pop-up displayed the projected mileage alongside the usage fees incurred should he approve the trip. He tapped the OK button and leaned his head back against the rest, feeling rather than seeing the light of the world envelop him as the garage door opened. The screen chimed again, and he felt the falling of the vehicle's smooth reverse, and then a moment later he was moving forward silently over the road, staring numbly out the window as reality passed him by. He pulled the tray table out from the seat side console, unfolded it over his lap, and balanced his PC on its surface. He spared a few minutes to go over what the day had in store, and found he could not inspire enough care within himself to read past subject lines and sender names. He stared at the screen until the words flattened out and faded until they became lines as meaningless as the meaning he assigned to them, and when he became sick of looking at them, he closed the PC and returned it to the bag. He looked out the window. He was passing down the main thoroughfare of the city, other cars moving around him in perfect hive mind formation, swerving by and encircling, flitting, weaving, an intricate ebb and flow of machine coordination. Giles ignored this miracle to the same degree that all miracles were now ignored. He looked beyond the precise dance of these classical systems to the curb beyond, to the vast line of people running down the block and back around the building, reaching far out of sight and terminating God knew where. He thought of a thing his grandfather had once told him, of a time in his grandfather's father's time when unemployment had flown out of control, of the never-ending line of people who had lost their jobs and their homes, of the never-ending line of people who stood all day waiting for free bread, praying like hell they could get to it before the supply ran out. What had the unemployment rate been at the time of his great-grandfather? Had it been anywhere close to 18%? He looked out the window at the people wrapped around the unemployment office, hundreds of them at least, and maybe approaching thousands, and thought to himself, that is what 18% looks like. That is an 18% line. There are so many. I wonder what percentage it takes for bread to be distributed, and what must a line for something like that look like? 18% already seems huge to me, and those people sitting on the corner with their bags and their ripped-up jackets and their signs asking for spare change, those are 18% people. What will they do when cash goes away, I wonder? They're talking about it again, the Teflon bastards up on the hill, talking about the uselessness of cash, the burden of cash, the quaint and trivial clinging to the use of cash. What then for the 18% people? Do they then get issued vid readers like the businesses and the merchants? Come, come stand in line for your bread and your vid readers then. And come early, before we run out. He looked at the line and thought these things, and noted how they all looked down at the pavement as they stood in that line, shuffling forward only when the ones in front of them shuffled forward, always looking down. The 18% people. Would it be so at 20%? Or would they perhaps begin to look up again at 20%? And would the authorities be called in to look back at them and keep them in line and push them back into line when they tried to step out of it? Giles sighed and shook his head as they scrolled by. They cycled by, a never-ending cycle, like the never-ending cycle that put them there. The Republicans came into power and there was more revenue than had ever been seen in all of history. And yet the cash was as scarce as the jobs. The Democrats came into power, and there was again more revenue than had been seen in all of history, more so even than when the Republicans had been in power before them, and yet the cash was as scarce as the jobs. A constant cycle, like the cycle of birth, life, death, the changing of the guard, the generating of the revenue, and the scarcity of cash, like the scarcity of jobs. He leaned back in his seat and looked up into the sky through the roof. It was clear and blue overhead, a beautiful sky. He loved looking up into the sky, finding the emptiness there that he lacked below. The car moved beneath him, pulling him along, but the sky did not move overhead, and if he focused carefully, he could not see the edges of the building tops passing by, nor the pillars of the stationary cameras, nor the faces of the 18% people. He felt the car turn sharply to the left, accelerate, and then it began to climb. He was on the freeway a moment later, the mind within the car merging him into traffic like the teeth of a closing zipper. And he thought of all the different cars on the road as they chattered silently to each other through the cloud, and about how he was surrounded by the cloud, though he saw no clouds overhead. And the thought of these things made him exhausted. He dozed as the car rocked gently along at 120 miles per hour. There was a morning office ritual just as there was a morning awakening ritual, to be observed daily and without fail. There was the shuffle past the front door and the weaving through of suited people standing within the lobby as they smiled to each other and passed around business cards that should have been anachronistic but were not. The passing through the hallways on the way to the office, lifting the chin high and greeting to people you knew and nodding head down to people you did not. Unlock door, enter office, lights come on. Arrange the PC on the desk, let the screen awaken. Find the coffee cup, find the way to the coffee machine, stand in line. Wait for those ahead to fill their cups. Grimace at the ones who filled their cups twice as the line backed up even further. Suppress fantasies of upending their coffee over their heads. Wait for the line to shuffle forward and look only at the ground, hoping no one will speak to you or ask you questions. Laugh politely when the joke is made for the need to get more coffee machines to fill the demand. Laugh politely while you wonder if death is a thing that is instantaneous, or if it happens to you a little bit at a time every day, every time you dig up the will to laugh politely at the same tired joke. And is it possible that laughter is like heartbeats? Do you only get so many of them apportioned to you throughout the length of your days, and is the wasting of these things like the wasting of the time you have, and if that is so, is the wasting of these things a tragedy? Is it possible that a laugh, even a fake laugh, that you will never again have back for yourself? Is it possible that this is not a good thing to waste freely? Never mind. Fill the cup. Wait for it to fill. Keep your head down. The cup is filled now, very well. Keep your head down and fuck off back to the office. Pretend not to hear if you're called. Sit down before the PC, open up the mail. Stare at the mail and wait for it to matter, though it will not. Watch as the letters go flat and meaningless again. Drink the coffee and stare at the letters as they go flat and meaningless. The daily micromanagement session comes soon after. Go to it and stand around, waiting for everyone else to show up 10 minutes late. Go around the room, ignore status reports with one ear, listen for your name with the other. Your name is called. Give status. Try to make it sound as though more has been accomplished. Adjourn 15 minutes late, no further along than before. Return to the office and look at the flat and meaningless letters. Perhaps it is time to begin. Something. Anything. Perhaps now is a good time. Perhaps now there is something useful that can be done, but no. Lunch is very close now, very close, and it makes no sense to start something new so close to lunch. No. Out of the question. No sense at all to get a momentum going, only to arrest it again 20 minutes later when it is time for lunch. Might as well wait until lunch is completed and try to get something going after. The coffee cup is now empty. It is a good time to get more coffee. A new message popped onto Giles' screen as he stared at his coffee cup. The letters of this message were bold in ways that the ones beneath it were not, and he saw that he had been assigned to a training session for the new technology he was expected to use on the latest project, whatever that might happen to be. Everything felt so fast to him now. Once upon a time, the world seemed as though it could not move fast enough for his tastes, and now it was all far too fast for his comfort. He thought of the speed of things, of the nature of speed, and was tired. A soft knock at his door distracted him from the flat and meaningless letters. He looked up to see Reggie leaned into his office. His eyes had the look of someone who asked for entry, yet he kept leaning slowly into the space, and Giles knew he would keep coming, even if the time was not good. Giles nodded at him and waved at the chair on the other side of his desk. Reggie perked up at this, probably happy he would not have to insist. Reggie arranged himself into the chair, adjusting his limbs and tugging at points of his clothing as if the physical act of existing in the chair was a composition. Giles watched him silently and could tell from the time he took that a number of things would be requested. He glanced into Reggie's eye and saw the bright green blotch of light at the center of the pupil that so many now carried, and resisted looking away in discomfort. He suppressed the look his face wanted to make and asked, "What brings you around, Reggie?" Reggie nodded kindly at this question. There seemed to be kindness in everything he did, kindness even when he encroached. "A couple of things for you. First of all, I got another email from Social this morning." Giles grimaced and looked back at his screen. "There have been a number of company articles shared on social media over the last week, Giles. You haven't liked any of them." He wanted to say something, but did not trust himself to do so without a chain of obscenities. "We all have to do it, Giles. Company initiative and all. Even I have to do it." "Does it not seem idiotic to you, Reggie, that the COO of the goddamned company is required to take time out of his day to go like articles on the cloud? There are only a small handful of people who care about that. Some of them are industry nerds that vlog about this stuff, and the rest are the twits in Social." "Honestly, I don't mind doing it, Giles. And I don't understand why it's such an imposition for you. Just keep a page open in the background. You know what sites we post to. When something pops up, you just tab over and click a button. Jesus, be glad we're not required to comment. They were discussing that before Linnea shot it down." Giles flexed a hand over his keyboard. He disliked hearing her name. He said, "Wouldn't it make sense for us to get an email when these articles are shared, so that we could eliminate such oversights?" Reggie shook his head slowly. "They feel engagement is enhanced if employees have to actively monitor for new posts." "Christ, do you people actually want me to engineer anything, or would you prefer I just spend my day masturbating over the keyboard?" Reggie went still at this, and his eyebrows began to raise in the precise manner that showed he was not impressed. "Yes. And what exactly have you engineered for us lately?" When Giles did not answer, he nodded, and his eyebrows remained raised in their precise manner. "Yes. Giles, I have enough clout to keep you in this office, though God knows you should have been director by now, but okay. You're happy being an engineer. Fine. Even if you don't actually do it so much anymore. You made your bones with us early, and enough of the old-timers like me know it, so I can keep you protected, and you keep that salary. But I can't protect you if you just flat-out refuse the little things, okay? And these are all little things, Giles. You're not being asked to do anything difficult. Just keep the sites open, like the articles when they show up to all the meetings, have an opinion now and again, observe the ceremonies. Honestly, if you just get a set of lenses, you'd be able to configure them to show a pop-up whenever a new article dropped. No. Giles, they're really not that bad. Not becoming a fucking guardian drone, Reggie." Reggie winced and looked out the doorway of the office onto the common floor. He looked at the sea of heads bent over screens, punching away on their little assortment of daily tasks, and relaxed. None of them seemed to have heard. He reached out to pinch the door in his fingers and swung it shut. "We don't like to speak of such things, Giles."
"Good."
"That's good. I'd be worried if you weren't embarrassed."
"I'm not embarrassed, Giles. It wasn't my decision."
"Of course not.
Watch it, asshole. You just want to make sure you're directing it at the right person. I'm not him. Or her. And besides, is it so different from before? People hated the drones, and there was so much unrest over it. They don't like to be reminded that they're being watched. I mean, honestly, we were all being spied on long before Guardian. We all knew it.
How is it any different now?"
"People don't want to know, Giles. They don't want to be reminded."
"The difference is exactly that they knew, Reggie. And the drones could only travel outside in public areas. Most people don't even take their lenses out to sleep. When was the last time you took yours out? It's a violation of privacy."
"Oh, it is not," Reggie snorted.
"It is. It damned well is. If you're being recorded in your home, it's a violation of privacy. Who's doing the violation, Giles? Nobody's watching the feed. It's all just being run through a web of classical systems. It's archived in encrypted form. It's just there in case it's needed, and none of it's admissible."
"Nobody's watching that you know about," Giles muttered.
"Now with the conspiracy theories again. It's not a fucking theory if it's actually happening. Let me ask you this. Would we still be doing this if the program hadn't been co-opted through a government contract? What would the moral committee have to say if we just went off and did this ourselves?"
Reggie did not answer. He glanced away at the corner of the desk.
"Uh-huh. So at least there's still some part of you that understands. No, I won't be getting a set of lenses. I want no part of it. Or are they becoming mandatory now? Like the stupid social media initiative?"
"They are not."
"Excellent. I'll stick with my mobile, thanks." Reggie nodded, then shook his head. He had given in, and Giles could see it. Could see that Reggie had given in to his argument the way he had given in to everything else. He seemed to have grown old overnight, though Giles knew it had been a process of intervening years. His hair had grayed, and he had put on weight. He had a tired look, a look as tired as Giles felt, and he wondered when it was that they had both given in. No, that was not true. Giles did not wonder for himself. He knew for himself, but he wondered for Reggie. It had not been when Anagnorisis bought them out. He felt sure of this. Anagnorisis. A partnership, they had said. God damn them. God damn Linnea and her board, and God damn the goddamned company. He looked at Reggie and saw how he had given in and felt tired. He felt so tired all the time. It made him fucking sick for all the exhaustion he felt. He sighed and said,
"You said you had a couple of things, Reggie."
"Yeah, we want to overhaul it."
"We?"
"They. They want to overhaul it."
"How?"
"It's actually a good thing if you want to get right down to it," Reggie said. "They want to revamp the back end so that the entire thing is run by a cluster of capable sub-agents."
"Reggie, how is that a good thing?"
"Less need for human interaction. Right now, if they want to get a positive on someone, data has to be reviewed. The classical systems can't make those decisions. You know that. They can only flag a match. A human still has to come in and review that match. Run it through a capable sub-agent, though? Or a cluster of them, given how much data we're talking about? It removes the human element entirely. Until you get to the courtroom, anyway."
"I don't like it."
"Oh, Jesus, what now?" Reggie threw his hands out in a groan. "You were just bitching about privacy. Does this not enhance privacy?"
"No, I don't really see how it does. It doesn't matter if the data is being reviewed by human eyes or not, Reggie. It's still being stored.
And what about the good that's been done with this system? What about that? The attacks that have been shut down before they ever had a chance to kick off?"
"Yeah, you know what I've noticed about that, Reggie? Isn't it convenient that the system really only comes into play when someone wants to make an attack? Whenever the story our government wants to advance is challenged?"
Reggie's eyes widened.
"I can't believe I'm hearing this. You're saying you want..."
"No, don't be ridiculous."
"Well, what then?
Why isn't it being used to stop domestic violence? Why isn't it used in child abuse cases or in the drug houses? Why don't we use it to shut down sexual slavery?"
Well, that's tricky. No, it's not tricky at all. They don't use it in those cases because then they'd have to acknowledge that all that data is being collected via lenses now, where before it was the drones. They got rid of the drones and posted static cameras, Reggie, and because people thought there was a stationary thing that could be avoided, they relaxed a bit and let it go. If a group of people spools up an attack of some sort, that's easy. They say they picked up more of that chatter and find corroborating evidence to support it, and the rest of it all is ignored. It's ignored because they know people would revolt if they found out what was going on. Reggie rolled his eyes and said, "It wouldn't revolt, Giles. It's too easy not to." "I suppose we'll never know." Reggie stood up, waving a hand carelessly. "I'm going to open this door now, Giles." "Fine. Go ahead and do so." "Are you saying you won't do it?" Giles did not answer. He could find no words that would not taste sour. "I can shield you, Giles, like I said, but I can only do it if you're on board. You can idle the days away here, collect your benefits, your paycheck and such, but that can't keep up if you flat out refuse assignments when we need them done. Assemble a team. Keep them small as usual. Get them to sign all the usual paperwork and just oversee it. Just oversee it and don't work on the design if it makes you feel better. Go to the meetings, report status, and have them do it. You'll do that, won't you? Won't you, Giles?" He stared at his screen, stared at the flat and meaningless letters. "Good," Reggie said. He closed the door as he left.